time you start buying land.
The power is gonna restore 15 to 20 million jobs. I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860. If you live in the Philadelphia, southeastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and northern Delaware area. And of course, if you have Alexa in the house, all you have to do is say, Alexa, 860 AM radio. Every Wednesday between 11 a.m. and 12 noon, you'll hear our broadcast and our guests and all of our panel members discussing very important efforts that we are trying to promote here in the USA. If you have family members and friends in the area, give them a contact, send them a text, and invite them to tune in. We have a very wonderful show prepared for you today. And as you know, our panel members are Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store. And Mark is with us today, and he's from up in the Buffalo area where they had 7 feet of snow and snow drifts 12 to 14 feet. Also joining us today is Larkin Conley, National Small Business Advocate. Rich Logis may be with us, but he's on a special assignment. And our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash. And we're very pleased to have all of you calling in and making sure that our broadcast is known to family and friends. First, I want to say thank you to everyone helping to promote November as American Made Month. It certainly has been a great effort during the last 8 years, and it really encouraged many businesses to promote the fact that they're made here in the United States of America, and it also encouraged people to look for the Made in America label where they shop. It's a great thing, and we're going to talk about our December campaign coming up during the program today. I also want to say a thank you to Professor Michael Bussler. He is a professor of finance at Stockton University in Galloway, New Jersey, for being our guest last Wednesday. Professor Bussler has been with us several times, and he'll be back in a few weeks to continue our discussions on the changing financial times here in America. And tomorrow, America's families and friends will celebrate Thanksgiving Day, a time for all of us to share our love and good cheer. And best wishes to you and yours from all of us here at 860 and everybody from American Workers Radio and everybody involved with our daily radio programs here on 860 that are part of our network broadcasting. We all hear so much bad news being reported, but I also see a lot of good things happening across America that are not reported that often. And we try to, you know, have a balance here, just like we're begging for a balance in the United States to get more American-made products in circulation. But I feel good news helps us feel better about where we live, being involved in school and community groups, and so much more. And as we all know, since the clock only goes in one direction, I always encourage people to spread the good news and support efforts that promote good news and opportunities. And of course, our weekly show, our daily efforts, the Buy American Made campaign, American Workers Need You, all that we do is trying to promote good news. I wish more of the national media would join our efforts, but they say it's controversial to be promoting the American-made label because there are so many labels from foreign countries that we shouldn't be pushing one over the other. So what can I do about it? I just have to keep after it, and I thank all of you for helping us keep after it. Now, we're always discussing the importance of restoring the trades in America's schools and how difficult it has been to get those trades back. And by the way, since the trade classes were downsized and many places canceled altogether in America's high schools, we really lost a lot of ability to have skilled workers ready and able to go. However, today, I'm pleased to say that we're going to spread some good news as we welcome our guest for today's broadcast. And his name is Mr. Michael Rounds, and he is the president of Williamson College of the Trades in Media, Pennsylvania. Now, I know a few people who had their start there at Williamson, and I have to tell you, it's an unbelievable school. And since there's no better way to hear about a first-time guest coming to our show, I'd like to have Michael himself introduce himself and tell us a little bit about his background and what led to Michael Rounds becoming the president of Williamson College of the Trades in Media, Pennsylvania. President Rounds, welcome to our broadcast.
Well, good morning, Michael, and happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody, and thank you for the invitation to come on the show. So, brief introduction. I grew up in the Midwest and, you know, a decent football player and a good student. I wanted to study engineering and I wanted to play Division I football. And the only place that seemed to be interested in letting me do that was West Point. So we went out and visited, and my parents said, hey, you know, we got three other kids to worry about trying to, you know, get through school. It's free. Why don't you give it a try and see how it goes? And that's how I ended up at West Point in 1984, played 4 years Army football there. We did let Navy win 1 year. We won three of the four, but, you know, we had to let them win once so we didn't get too demoralized. But studied engineering, commissioned into the Army Corps of Engineers in 1988, and then at that point, I knew I had 5 years to serve in the Army, and I was excited about going to do that, but I didn't see necessarily being a career guy. I didn't have any military in my background, but I just had great opportunities in the Army as I went along, decided I wanted to stay and be a company commander, and once that was done, I had the opportunity to go back and get my master's degree and come to West Point and teach engineering. So I got to do that in the late 90s. I got to do that again in 2005 to 2008, and then was working as a deputy commander of the West Point Prep School in New Jersey as we were building a new school up at West Point. So ended up having 25 years of active duty service, great opportunities, and enjoyed that a lot. But I had a headhunter that called me as I was getting, you know, ready to retire, and he said, I have this unique school out near Pennsylvania, near Philadelphia. It's been around for 130 years. It teaches a trade. It gives an associate degree. All the young men that go there go for free. And it's just, I've done the search for their last two presidents. They were both retired colonels from the Air Force. It's run like a military academy. It's run like a military school. But the focus is the trades, the discipline structure, all those things. And so, never having heard of it, I went out to visit and came back and told my wife, wow, if I could land with that job after retiring from the Army, that would really get me excited to get up in the morning, because really amazing young men who, you know, old school, get up early and they have to be where they're supposed to be, discipline, structure, all that kind of stuff. But the amazing part for these guys is when they graduate, they generally have three or four job offers. So you end up with an associate degree in a trade focused career. You have no debt. You have multiple job offers coming out. So I was lucky enough that they offered me the job, and we've been here now 10 years. And the amazing thing for me is it just blows me away that so many people, even locally in Philadelphia, in Wilmington and areas, had never heard of Williamson. But it is an amazing institution. And it really does, there's such a need right now for not only skilled trades in the workforce, but also leaders of character and people that can see that American dream of starting their own business. All that is part of what these young men experience at Williamson, and it just really proud to be part of it.
You know, Michael, in our conversation, you were telling me about a typical day there at Williamson. Can you just let our people know from start to finish what happens at the crack of dawn?
Sure. So again, it seems very familiar to me, having gone through the military academy and taught there and worked there. But so, breakfast is optional, starting at 6:30, and then we have lineup at 7:15. So before you come to lineup, you have to have your room ready to go. You have to make your bed, clean your room. There's cleaning the common areas, all those kind of things. So at 7:15, you got to be standing tall out in front of the main building in coat and tie. And we raise the flag. We play reveille. And then the officer of the day inspects every student on the way into chapel. They're inspecting them to make sure they shaved, that their hair, shoes are shined, that they're looking good. And you go up to chapel. We have a 15-minute chapel service every day. We start with the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, Mr. Williamson, when he founded the school in 1888, he was a Quaker who wanted that in his deed of trust. He said, I want four things in my school. I want, you know, them to learn a good trade. I want them to get an education. Moral and religious development and training is part of that. Exercise and recreation become useful, respected members of society. So 15-minute chapel service. We go off to start our day. 8 o'clock, the second-year students, the juniors, are in their shops working on individual projects up till lunchtime. During that time, the seniors and the freshmen, we don't have sophomores here, which is a three-year program, kind of unique, but the seniors and the freshmen, the first-year and the third-year guys, are in academic classes that support the general education requirements and theory of the shops, the trades that they're learning. We come together for lunch. And then after lunch, from 1 to 4, we flop it. So the seniors are now in the shops with the freshmen, and that's part of their leadership training, is training and teaching the freshmen and inspecting their work and doing that, while the juniors are now in academic classes. We break about 4:30. The intercollegiate athletes that are in season will go off to practice. The rest of the students kind of have some free time in the afternoon for extra shop or, you know, shop time, do whatever they kind of want. We come together again for dinner. And then the evening is study time. You know, the guys that were practicing have their study time. The guys that are, you know, had extra time in the afternoon will be able to do some, you know, intramurals and clubs and activities, those kind of things. So it's a very busy schedule. So by 10:30, they're pretty much tired and hitting the pillow, and then they get up the next day and do it again. And what we find for a lot of these guys is that kind of structure and discipline is exactly kind of what they need to kind of get their life on a track that is going to make them successful. You know, if you show up late to lineup, well, you get a couple points. You do that a couple times. Now you're showing up on Saturday to work extra hours. You have to be on time, and you be respectful, and you have to show up, and you have to work hard. And that is all part of the culture that they're enveloped in here at Williamson. It's all 100% residential. Nobody lives off campus. We're here. And that, you know, that camaraderie, similar to the military, of just working together and, you know, helping each other out and getting each other to the end, is what really makes a difference for these young guys. And you can see their confidence growing through the 3 years. You can see how they, you know, now kind of look at the world as their opportunity to go out and do great things. And why wouldn't they? You know, last 2 weeks ago, we had our first career fair of the year over 2 days. We invite companies that are interested in hiring our young men when they graduate, and also for summer internships and employment. We had 136 companies from 15 different states that paid us to come. We grossed close to $70,000, and we only have 67 seniors. So you can kind of start to do the math. It's a great situation for our guys, but the fact that we have companies from 17 different states traveling all the way here to compete with each other to hire our guys tells me we have a big problem in this country, in young men and young people, period, that can work in these trades of you know, machining, construction, you know, any of those things. There's just a huge deficit, and we need to really start thinking about what we're doing as a country to encourage young people to pursue opportunities in the trades.
Michael, you're unbelievable. Williamson is unbelievable, and I want you to talk now with a man who is unbelievable. He's Mark Andel. I have to tell you something. He's going through a snowstorm up in Buffalo for the past 6 days, is it, Mark?
Yeah. Hi. How you doing, guys? Michael, thanks for being on our show. Very impressive. But most of all, thanks for serving our country and doing what you do. Give you a little background, Michael. I started as a retrofit kid, and I opened General Welding and Fabricating, which I've had for 33 years. We've got two plants, run 24 hours a day. Our motto is, you dream it, we build it. or repair it. And then I started the Made in America stores 12 years ago, which is the only store in the world that sells 100% exclusive Made in America products. We support skilled trades. I'm on a bunch of boards. Love to give kids a purpose, but I try to get metal shops, wood shops back in schools. My father was a tough guy and locked me in the garage. I joke and I pick on him every day. He's 86 uncensored, but he locked me in the garage, you know, and I said, that was illegal, but he taught me how to work with my hands. But no, guys, we're going through. So Friday, the first snow here. So, Michael, I'm a Boss Snowplow distributor, and there's 175 distributors. They're from the UP, Upper Michigan Peninsula, and we're their top 10. But anyways, we were getting ready for the first snow, but we never thought the first snow would have 7 foot of snow. It started about Friday in West New York, Buffalo.
Oh, wow. And, we've been watching it on the news, but I grew up in Minnesota, so I'm no stranger to cold weather and snow,
yeah.
And all of our family is still back in Minnesota, but I don't think we've ever experienced anything like I saw you guys have right there with that amount of snow.
It's
unbelievable.
We get feet of snow, of course, when Lake Erie's right. It was 56 degrees and a wind came over right, but, you know, it's also opening day hunting season up here, and on Thanksgiving week. And so anyways, Friday we've got about 2-3 foot. It started coming in the morning. By Saturday I had 6 foot plus. My parents got 7 foot. My brother got 7 foot. We're all south of Buffalo, and I sell the Boss Snowplow. I've plowed my whole life, and this snow was more than a snowplow can handle. I still kept up with it, but we've had loaders and snow blowers, and they've broke this Boss Snowplow, which is the number one plow. We had 13 break off the truck yesterday that were brought to us, you know, the frame. So, you know, you got to worry about roof collapses and things like that. So we've had quite a bit of snow. My daughter's 20. She's my boss, and I took her with her, you know, me plowing. She wanted to get out of house. I don't think she'll do that again. But also took her up to the hunting camp, and she learned how to load wood every 2 hours, which I don't think a lot of kids would do anymore, because if you don't put the wood in the stove, it was 22 degrees when we got at camp. I got it up to 50 by midnight from 9 o'clock. So, but I love to hear your program. You know, we support skilled trades, like I said, with the Made in America store. We're up to 11,100% products now. We support 500 privately owned American businesses. We're home base for Buffalo Niagara Honor Flight. The goal is to raise enough money to get 2 flights of heroes to Washington every year. Through nobody would give them a room and a key to the building, so I did, and we just became home base for Gold Star Mothers of New York to give them a place to have their meetings at. So we do a lot. I got a buddy out of Altoona, PA, and he's a country singer. He started music for our vets, so music's a great healing tool. But my big push is skilled trades. Like you said, we don't have enough skilled trade workers, and after the pandemic, it's even worse. I run about 60 guys with my 2 plants, and we're full welding, hydraulics, mechanical, fabrication. Your school just sounds unbelievable. It's refreshing to hear what you're doing. So I just want to thank you for that. But you're right. You know, they're going to get the money. They're going to get paid the money of doctors, these skilled trade guys. And everything has a computer on it, too, nowadays. And you just need these skilled trade workers. But you can't grow a company or the country without the skilled trades.
Just 100% agree. You know, our challenge here is that we're small, and we have to turn away so many young men that would like to come, and obviously so many employers that would like to hire guys. So we need, you know, people to be aware of the situation, right? So like you mentioned in the high schools, like when I went to high school in the early 80s, right, that every high school had a metal shop and a wood shop, and it was part of the curriculum that everyone got to take a hack at that, you know, and see if that was what they liked to do. And that disappeared. And when I see our young men come to interview, because, you know, we want to make sure we got the right guys here, that, yes, it's a zero tolerance, drugs and alcohol. There's no girls. You're up early in the morning. It's not, you know, always, you know, your version of fun, right? But so we interview them pretty closely. And I will say a lot of times they have very little confidence because they haven't felt respected in their high schools. They're celebrating, trying to send everybody to college and the athletes, those kind of things. But if you're a young man or a young woman that likes to work with your hands and wants to do those kind of things, there's a certain label that goes with that, and it's not always a positive one. And so, you know, but when they come here and they see that the God-given abilities they have in working with their hands to build something, to fix something, that is a gift. That is not a lesser than. And, you know, I think we really have to look at our educational system all the way into junior high, and especially into high school, for the high school counselors to realize that that is not their job, to convince every student that they should run off to college at 18 years old, and not because they're not smart enough. That's the other message sometimes. Well, you know, if you're smart enough, that's what everybody does. If you're not, then here you go. And to recognize that there, you know, that as you move through life, like training and education and those kind of opportunities, you know, they come at different times and a different path. And so, you know, to encourage young people that have those kind of gifts to go into an apprentice program, to go get a trade-focused education, to go work in those fields, and be open to understand that those are all pathways to even higher. You know, one of the things about Williamson that's, you know, the students leave with such confidence, and they see our alumni, many who have become CEOs, have PhDs, you know, have started their own companies, many of them. And they can talk to our students and say, I was just like you. I didn't have two nickels to rub together, but Williamson set the foundation for me, and now I can go out and do great things. And, you know, America is still the land of opportunity. So this school that runs strictly on philanthropy, you know, basically is setting these kids into a course that they never envisioned that they even had a chance for. Some of these kids are literally, you know, living in cars. They have incarcerated parents, those kind of things. And when we have to choose our class, of which we only have room for 124 freshmen out of 400 qualified applicants, financial need really does kind of, you know, is the primary factor, right? And so the really cool thing about Williamson in a lot of ways too is that most of our graduates who have sons would love to send them here, but almost none of them can because they make too much money and they can't qualify to get them in.
Unbelievable. Michael, what's the income guideline to get into the school with the parents?
Well, so there is no guideline. Like, we don't disqualify anybody for the income, but when we come in and go through the process, we interview them first to make sure that they are the type of young man that comes in with their eyes wide open to what we're asking them to do, that is confident that they can do it. We do an academic screen of their high school records to make sure there's enough rigor in there that, you know, that they're going to be capable of completing the academic work that goes along with this. And then after that, it comes to the financial need is what really is what's the most challenging. We put those guys at the top of the list. So we generally have over 100 guys on the waiting list as we go into September that we're still, you know, if a student comes in August and decides this isn't really what they want to do, they don't like getting up early, they don't like doing all this stuff, then we have an opportunity to replace those freshmen off the waiting list. But once a class closes, that's the end of it. So for us, you know, that's part of the mission that Mr. Williamson gave us. He said, I see these poor young men on the street in Philadelphia. This is in 1888, and I want to build a school where they can, you know, that they can be useful, respected members of society. I want to teach them a trade, give them an education, give them an opportunity to have a good life. And that, you know, the first students came here in 1890, and we've been doing that ever since.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say that you're listening to American Workers Radio, and our guest today is Michael Rounds, president of Williamson College of the Trades and Media, Pennsylvania. Mark, I'm going to turn to Larkin for a few minutes. Larkin,
sure.
You've been listening to our guests. Do you have anything you would like to add to what he's doing?
Good morning, Michael, and both Michaels, good morning, and to our listeners. Do I have anything to add? Yes, I do. My one comment would be, wow. Wow. I can't even imagine not knowing about this program. I'm embarrassed that I don't know what Williamson is. Let me go back to something that you said, though, that really caught my ear. And that is that you get out of bed every morning. You can't wait to get to work. And I told my children this, and they all look at me like I have a third eyeball. I never had a job that I didn't hop out of bed for, ever, ever. No. I guess I'm just that kind of fortunate. But what I wanted to ask you is, when you put your 2 feet on the ground, beyond the the process of getting dressed and getting to school, what do you think of first? What's on your mind every morning?
When I first hit the floor, I pray, right? One of the things that drew me to this school is that, you know, Mr. Williamson was a Quaker, and moral and religious development, the chapel that we have every morning. So that's the first thing I think about, my spiritual life and, asking God to guide me through this day. And, as far as from there, I just enjoy being around these students. I live right on campus, as do about 30 of our staff and faculty. So I have a 100-yard commute to my office. I love to be there early in the morning, to be there with the students in chapel, and that's a pretty unique part of the program. But in a bigger picture, as somebody that served, 25 years on active duty, and some really amazing different opportunities. I served in the 101st Airborne Division. I was there when 9/11 happened, and we were the first group in 2003 to Iraq. I served in Afghanistan for a year, the Corps of Engineers at Bagram, doing construction. I had a lot of different opportunities to see the rest of the world and to realize how grateful we need to be for the nation that we have and how lucky we are to be born into this country, right, and the opportunities that we have. And so in a bigger picture, what I love about this place is that is what it's providing for these young men, this incredible opportunity that comes through hard work, discipline, showing respect. I mentioned that they're in coat and tie every day. Most of our kids have never owned a coat and tie, and so we have people that donate coats, ties, suits to our clothes closet so that these students can take what they need to come to line up every morning in coat and tie. They come to meals in coat and tie. The idea of, of respecting yourself and taking pride in the fact that you are working hard and that you are in a challenging environment. It's all the things that, when Michael opened the show and talking about, there's so much negativity in the world. There's so many bad things happening, and there's so much violence in the city of Philadelphia and those kind of things. And I think that happens when kids lose hope for something better. They can't see a path. And so in this little corner of the world, for me, it just energizes me to think that we're turning these lives around. Like, I'm not exaggerating when I say, you see a kid walk across the stage and you say, that kid was living in a car, and there was no hope for that kid. And now look, and what would have happened to him if he hadn't come here? So that's what, really energized me about the mission here. And people don't know about it. We just recently, we did have Kevin O'Connor come out last year, and he was like, wow. And he said, I got to talk to my producers. And they came back a couple times, and there was a 5-minute story that they did last March on Williamson, on this old house, right? So a lot of people were kind of like, wow, I never knew this place existed. And that's part of our challenge. When you run a school where nobody pays to go, it costs about $10 million a year to run this school for these 270 young men. We have to raise a lot of money, and we don't have a lot of marketing. But we're hopeful that, we can continue to expand our program here, but also inspire others. We shouldn't be unique in the country. Every big city should have a Williamson or a Williamson-like school out there. That there's a huge need. So I guess, it's a long answer to the question. And I feel so blessed to have landed here too, just like you guys. I had never heard of the place, 13 years ago. But when I saw it, I realized how special it is. And for my job, it's just to continue to maintain the high standards that the reputation that we have. And I tell our students, that's the jobs you're getting are based on the reputation of this school and the people that have come before you that have gone out and done great work. And you need to continue to keep that reputation strong. We don't ask the students to pay back what the cost to put them through here, but we do say that you have an obligation to go out there for whoever you decide to go work for, whatever job offer you take, that person needs to be back the next year at the career fair saying, I need 10 more guys like that. He's killing it. He's my best guy.
Beautiful. Oh,
yeah. I've got a follow up to that, and this is probably more loaded than I of a question than I normally would ask. But you're aware of, everybody's aware of, there's hardly anybody 2 feet and citizens of this country that don't understand, we're not in a very good way right now as a country. And my question to you is, as a purveyor of this educational system, what's it going to take to change all that? What's it going to take to get that level of discipline and that level of training and dedication and appreciation? And I mean, I can think of 15 different words. What's it going to take to turn this around?
That's a great question. I wish I could answer it. I, through all the years in the Army, as you know, as far as leadership, here's what I figured out. Like, there's a lot of things around you can't control, and it doesn't do a lot of good to waste a lot of time getting down and depressed about things that you can't control, but focus on the things that you can. And I've always been somebody who believes that great leaders are optimistic, enthusiastic, lead from the front by example, right? All those kind of things are important. So what I think is just what's happening today. Like, there are people, I think, now that will hear this conversation and say, you know what, I need to get involved somehow. I need to figure out how to, you know, this is important. And so my hope is just that, you know, that people can see what we're doing here and that we can get others to say, I want to do something like that. We had a school, guys that came probably 7 or 8 years ago and wanted to replicate Williamson as best they could, and they opened a school called Harmel Academy in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's based on all the things that we do here, and they just graduated their first class. And we would love to see across the country, you know, other places doing things like Williamson. But bigger picture than that, we run a summer camp for young men that have just finished their junior in high school. And part of it is to realize, like, we have a limited capacity, but we want to, you know, some of those young guys might matriculate to Williamson, but most of them probably won't. But what we want to do is encourage them and inspire them and show them what opportunities are available in the trades. And I think when parents start realizing, when you start really looking into the high cost of college and what are you really learning there and how is that applicable to what you want to achieve in life, and then you see the opportunities in the trades, then, you know, that'll start to change people's minds. And as people start to change their minds, then hopefully we can impact the educational system as well to say, like, hey, this is something we need to bring this balance back, right? We have enough lawyers, we have enough historians, we have enough philosophers, but we need workers and we need people that can build, fix, and do those kind of things. And you know what? It's a national security thing, right? I think we realized in the pandemic that when we rely on manufacturing and everything overseas, we outsource everything, we're putting ourselves in a dangerous spot. Now we need to continue to, you know, train tradesmen, engineers, scientists, people like that, to continue to be able to build things here and have that base as our economy, or we're going to be in trouble down the road.
I've been involved in American Workers Need You and the Buy American Made campaign and the radio program and all since 1999. And I'll tell you this, I promoted at many events we do the importance of trades being returned to our schools. However, because people in high places, many government officials, people in Washington and all, don't consider the trades the most important classes to offer, we're in a situation right here in the USA, we have no people to replace the people that are retiring. And that's a very sad. I'll tell you, your story is, you know, unbelievable to hear. And I wish we could get those trade programs back in the schools. As you know, in Philadelphia, we are having some help. Father Judge High School is going to open up a whole new wing of the school, trade programs in a brand new building. That's in Northeast Philadelphia, and I know the people up there, and I compliment them for that. However, I'd like to see more and more of our public schools have those programs restored, and I don't know how to do it because the people who are in the highest places have no desire. They seem like they're living in a silver spoon mentality, gold spoon mentality. And when you bring it up to them, they say, Well, most of the stuff is being made foreign now. And, you know, I said, but how about the repair, the HVAC and all? Well, it'll all take its course. I don't know what the hell that means, but...
Well, either. I know Father Judge High School well. One of my close friends I played football with at West Point, Chuck Schretzman, is a graduate. And so when I landed here, I connected with them. And we have a long history of judge guys coming here to Williamson. And Brian King and I talked years ago about, you know, his idea, his vision of doing this. And he's, you know, it's been very successful so far to the point where they're expanding the program. I think he told me at first that it didn't meet with a lot of excitement from the parents. And a couple years down the road, now they have to cap the program, right? So they've changed their minds. And so we have to be advocates. We have to change these people's minds. We have to show them, even, you know, for, you know, kids that come here and their parents, they might have bought into this idea that because of the reason they're in their financial situation or is because nobody in their family ever went to college, right? And so they're kind of hard to convince that this is coming into the trades is exactly what they think is best for their son or for their daughter, for their kid, until they start seeing the opportunities and the amount of money that's being paid and the amount of work that they have and the guys that have, you know, successful businesses in these areas. And then that's how we change your mind. And so we have to do that with our politicians as well. We have to show them programs that are working. One of the things we started doing is bringing the high school counselors to our career fair. We don't even have to talk to them. You said, just walk through the gym where there's 100-plus companies here from all these states, and you ask them why they're here, and then you'll figure it out pretty quickly. As a high school counselor, you need to start thinking on, this is a great opportunity, and maybe that will trickle down, you know, the administration. I think a lot of high schools are seeing, you know, the things that are going on and the marketability of you know, trades, and hopefully, you know, they'll start to wake up and realize that this is a very important thing, and we have to do our part in our educational system to encourage those that want to go into this path that this is a great career opportunity for you as a young person.
And, you know, you're absolutely right, Michael. I the other day I was driving down I-95, and there are two blinking billboards, steam fitters needed. Apply at this particular place, will train. Then another one is HVAC. I said to myself, this is unbelievable, but this is what it's come to. This unfortunate thing of this whole thing is that 30 years ago, one of the school counselors told me that this was a very important part of the curriculum. You either went to the shops in the school, or you took a bus and went to the trade school, which was a mile or two away. That's not happening anymore. And that's unfortunate. How do you change the mind of people who are so well, taken care of, the silver spoon mentality? They're not interested when you tell them about it. I even spoke to politicians during and prior to the midterm elections, and I said, why don't you promote the trades, doing something for the schools rather than all this mudslinging and all? And their thing is, well, that's really a local, schools are local, Michael. And I said, yes, but the schools get money from the federal government. They get money from the state government as well as from the local government. Why can't you put some, you know, pressure? Well, we have so many things going on. You know, we are addressing poverty. I said, well, poverty in many cases is caused by no jobs and no job skills. I mean, you were talking about nonsense instead of addressing a problem. If you have a flat tire, you fix the flat tire, or you just go nowhere.
Yeah. Michael, I'd like to bring up, I was involved with PTEC program. You probably heard of PTEC. You go through 4 years of your regular high school, and the children, you know, son or daughter, have to make the choice in eighth grade, basically. And if you decide to do the PTEC program, you stay and graduate. You can walk with your graduating class in 12th grade, but you stay two extra years, and you get an associate's degree. I was involved with Dream It, Do It, which I was blessed to be in a movie called American Made Movie, which I'd love to get you a copy. it was just a great movie showing why Made in America is important and supporting the country of living is important. But I, you know, all the I'm on four boards of different schools and always working with the trying to get skilled trades back in schools. But it always came down to parents, parents, and parents. A lot of times, just you know, they're thinking they want the college. You know, even though the child doesn't even know what they want to go to college for, as long as they went to college, so that one size fits all was a huge mistake in our country. And we've got to get it back, and I just can't say enough and hats off for what you're doing at your school. It's refreshing, gives me hope, and, you know, I'm all about the skilled trades, and we need them, so it has to change. But I love your discipline program.
Yeah, thanks. It's for someone that spent all those years in the military, it seems, you know, I had some people saying, well, the school's a little different than most colleges. I said, I don't know, it looks kind of similar to what I went through in college. Seems normal to me to get up at 6 a.m, make your bed, and do all the stuff. But you know, unfortunately, that's part of the culture too. Is that college is a 4-year vacation? You know, like you know, if you don't show up for class, so what? You know, if you don't go to class the day after Thursday night because everyone's out drinking, that's just normal kind of thing. And I think that's you know, it creates a mindset. You know, I think what you're talking about too. There was you know, I think there was a period of time, 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever, when all this started going away, and there was a kind of a bias that the vo-tech kids, right, were the ones that's where you put the kids that weren't motivated, not smart, troublemakers, whatever it was. And that vo-tech title became a negative thing. In fact, to the point of, you know, Mercy used to be Mercy Vo-Tech there in Philadelphia, another place where we get great young men that come up here to Williamson many times. But they changed their name a couple years ago to Mercy CTE, Career and Technical Education, instead of Vo-Tech, because they just felt that the Vo-Tech word had for many people, a negative connotation. And it shouldn't have, and it... You know, but that's part of what we have to change the mindset of people, you know, that this is, that's not what this is about. And, you know, we have to raise over $1 million a year just to keep the lights on in addition to our endowment to provide this free education for these guys. So we try to work with partner organizations in the city, and sometimes you still get that vibe like, well, you know, if we got a kid that's not smart enough to get into college, and I'm like, well, so you're going to take a kid that has no resources and they're going to get in, say, to Temple or whatever, and then they're going to be food insecure and they can't buy their books and nobody cares if they show up to class. Is that really the best path for that young person? Or is coming to a place like Williamson where he's surrounded by people who care and can support them and they, you know, they can see that the difference they make. And, you know, the other thing that I tell people all the time is like, what happened to the idea of like, you know, I can sit at a desk all day and pound away at a computer and I get up and walk away and there's no physical change, right? In the environment, I haven't done anything tangible. What about the guys that can say like 40 years from now, like, hey, son, hey, grandson, granddaughter, I built that building. Like I put the brick and block there. I framed that, right? That pride in actually accomplishing something is good for the soul. It's good for it should be encouraged. Like that is what we're all about. Like that there's a tangible difference you make. You can do something. Even you know those people that you talk about. I hope it doesn't come to this, but maybe when it comes to the point where their air conditioning goes out and their electricity's out and they can't get anyone to fix it, maybe then they'll wake up to the fact that you know what, trades are important and we got to have people that can actually do the work and have the skills. And if we don't, we're going to be in trouble.
Yes,
absolutely.
You know, Michael, some people are telling me that in the foreign countries, and by the way, why is it that the foreign countries are loaded with your type of programs and the people are disciplined? They come out of the different shops. They have one of five skills. You know, Michael, can you tell us exactly what are the trades that you're offering there at the college?
Sure. Like I said, we're small, which is, you know, we hope to go bigger. We have over 200 acres in our campus, but we actually exciting this year for the first time we've offered an electrical program, and we brought in our biggest freshman class in the history of the school. And it, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, 124, but it's 23 more guys that were allowed admission this year that were left on the waiting list. So electrical is our newest program. We have carpentry, we have masonry, We have machine tool technology. We have an interesting program, power plant, a power plant operator. We actually have a power plant on campus. It was one of the first 25 in the entire country that produced electrical power, and our guys run the power plant. So we run boilers, turbines. We use the steam to go out through the tunnels to heat the campus. We can do peak shaving and all those kind of things. So our guys actually work in the power plant, and many of them go on to jobs in nuclear plants or other type of power plants. And then the sixth program is landscape construction management. So it's, you know, learning to design and construct and horticulture focused, very broad, all the programs that, you know, we want them to get them a foundational knowledge in as broadly as possible. But actually, you know, what we find at these career fairs is many of the employers they're not as concerned about the specific skills. You know, some of them will say, yes, I want a machinist that knows CNC, and they're just there for that. But many of these companies would hire any of our graduates, you know, because of the fact that all of our programs are very hands-on, but it's the character pieces that they really are coming for, the reputation of the guys. And, I mean, we had a company a couple years ago from California that did boiler repair, and they came, they found us, and they said, we want to come hire your guys. And we kind of told them, well, here's the situation. So I said, okay, we'll be a chairman level sponsor. We'll pay extra money to have more access. And, you know, gave this great pitch to all the seniors, and they're all like, yeah, you know, nice, but I'm good. Right. And so I said, well, here's the deal. Like, the companies that really figured this out are hiring our underclassmen over the summer for paid, you know, jobs, internships, because then they realize they have the inside track. So that year, that company hired six young men that were underclassmen. None of them had ever been on an airplane, and they flew them out to California, Huntington Beach, and different places, right? And they gave them an apartment and a car and a gas card, and they treated them like kings, you know what? And they did great work for them. And one of those guys came back that next year as a senior. He signed on as their first full-time employee, and they've hired three or four more full-time guys through the last 4 or 5 years. And every year they bring kids out, right? And so as great as that is for our kids, I'd also love to see our talent staying here in this area. Like, you know, so, okay, we have, you know, 17 different states represented, but I would love it to see, you know, the talent that these guys have staying in our local area and working here in Philadelphia and Wilmington and in the area that we're around, instead of going out to California. But at the end of the day, these guys have a lot of options. So we're not going to, you know, dissuade them from anything. But that is the reality of the need.
You know, Michael, the people working in the trades are making very, very good incomes, very good incomes. And so I don't understand why our school districts aren't seeing this. They're seeing people crying for good people to work, especially as people retire and they need new people. How are we going to keep jobs here in the USA if we don't have enough hands-on ready people? What would you do if you were in our situation trying to encourage this? If you went to the state budget hearing for schools and the trades, would you have some ideas, additional ideas that you would like to do as a separate person outside of Williamson College?
I think it's just, you know, letting people know what the need is and what the salaries are and what the, you know, and again, changing their mind to say, like, it's not a lesser than, this isn't something, this is a probably better than option. And so we got to get to the schools so that the counselors understand that their job is to look at every young person they deal with, assess their gifts and talents and what they're good at, and then be a real counselor into what the best career path is. And maybe that is to go into the military for a few years and then do something after that. Maybe it is to go right to work into an apprentice program. Maybe it is, you know, to go to a junior college, community college like Williamson, trade focused program. But, you know, I think that's a big part of it. We have to change. And that's what we do here. Right. So we bring work with high schools. We try to bring in their principals, their leadership, their board people, their their counselors. We have done some great work of the Police Athletic League, they're in Philadelphia, PAL, and they become big, you know. So it's just connecting with those people so that the people that have access to those kids can be advocates for them to pursue the opportunities here. And it's nothing more than just supply and demand. I mean, if the legislators really saw, you know, what the options are for kids coming out of high school, what kind of careers they can have, what kind of money they can make, and the, you know, the ability to start their own business in these fields, construction and different things like that. I think people would, we just need to open their eyes to what the reality is and change maybe the bias that they have built up over years about what trades are about.
You know, Michael, about 5 years ago before the pandemic, we had a gathering of the school teachers here in Philadelphia. And I spoke to a group of them and they said, I said, listen, what can we do to get the trades back? And the one guy said, I'm sorry to tell you, Michael, but getting people to be teachers in these trades is going to be impossible. And that's why it hasn't been addressed in the last 10 or 15 years. The people, the trade teachers and all are out of the picture. That if they did have any people in the system, whether or graduating or whatever, are in jobs, nobody wants to be a teacher. And now we're having this problem. And I told them, I mentioned this before on the radio, it's time to go to private industry and get those people out of private industry who want to teach, would like to teach, and let's get this thing rolling again. Otherwise, we're going to become a second-class country because of no skilled workers.
First of all, Williamson, to me, you are building skilled labor. You're training skilled labor. There's no question of that. But what you're doing more than anything is that you're building leaders, and that's so important. It's hard to even fathom how that could happen in a public school environment. I'm very deeply involved in the school system, and I'm a member of Guardian. I have worked with Guardian ad litem. I've got a boy living in Daytona Beach right now in a foster home environment who's going to apply to Williamson.
And
I'm going to write his letter of recommendation. I've known this young man for, I guess it's about 8 years now. I mean, he was a very young type, and he's just a great kid. And all that aside, here's the stuff. What do you do in order to raise money? How does that participation, how does that work? Do you have corporate sponsors? You need $1 million a year. You don't have... Well, I should say you don't have. I suspect you don't have an overwhelming endowment. So what can we do?
Yeah, we do actually have an endowment that Mr. Williamson, when he passed away in 1889, he left an endowment for the school, $1 million, and $1 million to build the school, which Frank Furness was the architect of record that won the job. And in fact, we just ended up on the National Historic Register. We're the largest collection of Frank Furness architecture anywhere in the country, you know, and you know, all part of the school's kind of history. We actually, sections of our deed of trust were copied by a guy named Milton Hershey, who hired a Williamson graduate to start the Hershey Industrial School. But I think the biggest thing for us is just, you know, share the story. Like, you guys hadn't heard of this place. So many people across the country haven't. So we have an endowment. We have opportunities for individuals or corporations or anybody really that could sponsor scholarships for students to help us pay, you know, for the operational costs of running the school. The hardest part for us, I would tell you that the Board of Trustees, amazing group of people that just are passionate about the school, and me as part of that, we could be very content just sitting on our laurels and saying, look, we got four times the number of applicants we could take. We got 100 more companies that would hire guys if we had enough to graduate more. And we're in good shape, right? We're fine. But just like we expanded this program this year, like, we're not going to do that because it breaks my heart to turn away so many good young men that could use this opportunity that we just don't have room for. So ultimately for us, we have a huge dream of adding three more trades and a collaborative space and building a couple more dorms. And but, you know, like I said, it's a huge investment that it would take. But I really believe that if enough people saw what we're doing, that we could get there, right? And that's just our little part of the world here, but in a bigger picture. So what I'm saying for anybody listening to this show is, like, you know, go on Google, type in Williamson College of the Trades, and come visit us. Like, come see for yourself. I people think, you know, I'm, like, blowing smoke sometimes because I'm enthusiastic. I said, I won't even go on a tour with you. You go on a tour with a student. You grab any student and ask them, like, hey, how'd you find out about this place? What are you doing as a second-year carpenter? What'd you do this summer? What's your plan? And you'll be blown away by these young men who are, you know, men of character, leaders, like you mentioned. Leadership, we have a full leader development program. But we also tell them, you know, our core values, faith, integrity, diligence, excellence, service. And that means something, giving back. And we say, you know, you had this amazing opportunity to come through Williamson. And so when you graduate, you know, think it's not just about how big your wallet is, but what kind of a husband, what kind of a father, what kind of member of community, your church, those different things. Like, you're going to be a leader, and you have to take that seriously. And that's the expectation of a, you know, we don't call them Williamson graduates, we call them Williamson men. And it's an amazing group of individuals through the years that have come through this school. And we're hoping to put more and more through in the future, because we certainly need them. That's for sure.
Well, Michael, this has been unbelievable. You must come back, and because we have a lot of things to talk about. And I want to say a special thank you to Michael Rounds, president of Williamson College of the Trades and Media, Pennsylvania. And also thanks Larkin Conley and Mark Andel for being with us, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. We will have a copy of today's broadcast up on the internet today. And of course, grab that and email it out to family and friends, because spreading the good word is what we'd like to do. Also, as you know, December is National Small Business Month. So we'll be promoting that next week. And you will see a full-page advertisement in all of the Northeast Times editions of the newspapers, and also in the Philly Metro next week. So do spread the word. And thanks to everyone supporting our November initiative, the American Made Month. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, God bless all of you. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and stay well and be happy.